So, Tom, thank you for joining me to find out where do good ideas come from. I'd like to ask you a few questions because I know that you've researched this area, and to find out really what you can share with us about ideas, where they come from, what it feels like, and so on.
Oh yes, it's a fantastic question, Susie. Yeah, I think one of the main thrusts of research into brain and mind research tends to work like this: is that because the brain is such a complicated device, the way that people have approached it in the past is actually to study the non-functioning brain, and by looking at people that maybe got mental illness, or perhaps they've had some sort of accident or a stroke. Then the neurologists have been able to work out what bits of the brain do what, and then when they're damaged, what functions disappear. Now, we don't have to be quite as extreme as that to work out where ideas come from, but by looking at what stops ideas, we can start to get a clue as to how to get into the state where ideas can flow more freely. So, for example, imagine if you're suffering from, you just have a bout of road rage, and you're pretty angry, someone's cut you up. And you're out for revenge, and you try and overtake this person or what have you. It's hardly a time, is it, to have a great idea?
That's right.
Or imagine that you just had a phone call with some bad news, or somebody's annoyed you, or what have you. Then your creativity goes out the window. And if you think about what's happening in those moments, you're being thrust into what we call internal dialogue. We might spend half the day thinking about a conversation that went badly, or worrying about an interview that we got and rehearsing our answers. I might have spent some time before this call thinking about what I was going to say. And if I was going to do that, that's going to block any form of idea coming in. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Or would it activate bad ideas? Or ideas that aren't going to work?
Yeah, well, I think it makes bad ideas persist, and it makes that internal dialogue, let's say, especially if it's got an element of worry or concern or fear, it will allow the bad idea to persist. And our brains are only programmed at the moment to have one thought at a time, and many people don't even realize that if you have a thought, then another thought can't come in. So if you think about something different, the original thought disappears. So these thoughts are all about, oh, woe is me, or where's the next paycheck coming from, or what have you. Then there's no space at all in your brain for good ideas to come in.
Right, I understand. So we can hold just one thought at a time. I've never really considered that, but I guess that's true.
Yeah, it's called. I've got a meditation that's based on that, which we can link to at the bottom of this interview. And it's entitled The Quantum Collapse of Thought. And it's based on Heisenberg's uncertainty principle, where you can't measure the position and the velocity or momentum of an electron at the same time. And thoughts are quanta. They're like atomic particles or waves. And as a thought comes in, then that replaces the thought that you were thinking about. And this is the basis of counting sheep at night.
Yes.
So if we want to get to the state where ideas come in, we've got to almost get our thoughts to cancel and to null. And obviously, one way to do this is the meditative state. But a lot of people have trouble making their brain go quiet. But if you think about it, have you ever driven somewhere and not known how you got to the other end?
Very often.
Yeah. And in that state, you were in what's called a meditative state, even if you weren't aware of it. And so we are all natural meditators, and that meditative state is exactly the sort of mental framework you need to let ideas come in.
So where do they come from?
There's theories about this. My belief is that we share a connection to a collective consciousness, and this is all knowledge, all wisdom, past, present, and future from all people, and in fact all beings as well, because animal life and plant life are all part of this too. And that in the meditative state you can tap into this, and it's how people like Leonardo da Vinci perhaps got the vision of a helicopter and a parachute, years before his time.
So, if we can tap into future thought, that carries with it quite a lot of interesting possibilities.
Yeah, well, obviously the person that you resonate most closely with is the version of you which is a few seconds into the future. So as I'm speaking now, I'm almost morphing into the future version of me, as you are with you and as the listeners are with them. And so if you can actually morph with the person, the version of you which is a second away from now, there's no reason why you can't connect with the person that's a year away from now or 2 years from now.
And what good would that do to be able to morph with a year ahead? Well, it might not be that good, Tom.
Well, the future you, especially if you set some good goals, could know exactly the things that you need to know now to get to be the future you.
Isn't that a bit scary?
It's a bit weird, but it's just a thought. It doesn't matter if it's a real thought or a non-real thought, so long as it produces results.
And what's a non-real thought?
Well, a good question. So, you know, do you know your thoughts are real at all? Do you know that when you're dreaming, it all seems very real, doesn't it? And you think you're in that dream, and when you wake up, you think you're in this, you think you're awake. But we don't know for a fact if we're not in a dream state at the moment.
So thinking about your thoughts is problematic, I guess, when we're going this deep into what ideas are.
Well, it doesn't have to be problematic. What's interesting about it is that when you've experienced the idea kind of thought, what happens is you tend to notice it's actually got a slightly different flavour to it, and it's got a different sound. And most people don't even think what accent they speak to themselves in. And if you think about that, it might not even be the accent that you hear through sound waves.
Oh, that sounds interesting. So explain a bit more about that.
Yeah, well, what happens is when you get these ideas, they kind of come in as a whisper, and they come in against the grain of your current thought process. So, and I call them light bulb moments, and they got other names like eureka moments and aha moments and what have you. And because they come in against the run of your normal thought process, and they're a bit of a sort of flip, if you like, then they're absolutely worth paying attention to. So this is where the problem disappears. So the thoughts coming in, that there are slightly different natures. You've got the internal dialogue. You've got the sort of the whisperings of your unconscious mind that might be warning you about things or asking you to pay attention to things. You know, when someone says your name, Susie, in the hubbub of a party, you can actually, you pick it out amongst all the noise.
Yes.
That's your unconscious mind just telling you you need to pay attention to something. And then you get these thoughts, which I call ethereal whispers. And they're the thoughts which are potentially from the future you or from the collective consciousness. And they're the ones which are the things that you should really pay attention to. So they're the gems that can take you in absolutely brand new directions and open up amazing happenstances for you.
So should we be paying more attention then to the little quiet whispering thoughts that are bubbling under?
If you can, but look, you know, we're in this, maybe in this imperfect world where people have got jobs to do, they've got their kids to take to school and loads of activities. So I don't think it's a question of just sort of flipping into some sort of meditative state 24 hours a day. I think it's just a question of making sure that every day you generate a bit of me time. And that could be 5 minutes of meditation, or it could be a 10-minute walk. You know, if you commute, a good idea is to get off a train station earlier or get off the bus early and just walk for a mile or so. And looking up is really important. If you look down, and especially if you look down and to the left, then that state is when you're in internal thought. And if you look at a load of communities, you can see everybody is in that sort of mode. Whereas if you look up slightly, bearing in mind you might have to look out for tree roots and paving slabs and what have you, it tends to get you into this mode where these ideas can pop in.
And why is that, Tom? Is that to do with eye accessing or where we're coding information in the brain?
Yeah, I think it's a very old neurological pattern that probably goes right back to primeval days, you know, that maybe that when, I don't know, chickens are looking down for grains of rice or grains on the floor, they're in that internal mode. And when they're looking up, they're looking at opportunities or looking for predators or whatever. So it's a very basic coding, I think, to do with sort of being alive on the planet.
Wow. Well, in there are some tremendous pieces. And from pecking our grain off the ground through to looking up to new opportunities, we've got some wonderful stuff to consider and think about thinking. Tom, thank you so much. Until the next time, I look forward to talking to you.
My pleasure.